Hi there, and welcome to the latest episode of Music Talks, the podcast where we ask a guest to choose a song from each decade of their life, talk us through how they went about that, and most importantly, why those songs mean so much to them. I'm delighted to say that today my guest is a gentleman called Ian Braisby. Ian is the latest in a run of actually listeners to the podcast who've got in touch and been good enough to agree to come on the show. And having had a fairly extensive email dialogue with Ian over the last couple of weeks, where amongst other things, I think we've probably attended about a dozen Springsteen concerts at the same time and not known. Ian, welcome to Music Talks.
Hi, Terry. Thank you very much for having me on the podcast.
It's absolutely my pleasure, Ian. And as I say, looking forward to the discussion. Now, as a listener, and I'm grateful for that, you know that I always start with please paint the pen portrait. So as I say, I feel like I've got to know you quite a lot over the last few weeks. But for folks listening, just talk us through who Ian is, please.
Yeah, sure, Terry. No problem. Well, my name's Ian. As you say, I am 46 years old, and I was born in a little mining community just north of Nottingham. So I grew up definitely in kind of a small town. But for most of my adult life, I've lived in Birmingham, which is where I live now. I came here originally to study at the university here, and then ended up, after various adventures, landing back here, which is where I've made my home. I live with my wife. She's called Sally Jane. We don't have any kids. And I work for myself. I'm a freelance translator. I translate German to English. I speak fluent German. And I also work as a tour guide. So I do a lot of tours of all kinds around the Midlands and all over the country, especially during the summer, working with a lot of German-speaking visitors to the UK. So that's what I do. That's a little bit about me.
We're recording this in the afternoon, but you've had an interesting morning, I believe, Ian.
Yes, I have. I've been giving a couple of talks this morning to West Midlands Police. That was planned. It's not a euphemism for helping them with their inquiries.
Sorry, your guest has been delayed by Her Majesty's Police Force.
So, yes, I've been talking to them about autism in the workplace. It's something that's kind of a very important thing to me. I was diagnosed with high-functioning autism about 6 years ago. And since then, I've kind of got in a little bit to a bit of advocacy work in terms of going in to talk to organisations about how they can make their workplaces more autism friendly and how they can recognise people's needs a bit better. So, yeah, that's what I've been doing this morning. I've had a real run of tours this week and these two talks this morning. So if I sound a little bit like John Lennon recording Twist and Shout at the end of the Please Me recordings, then that'll be why.
For the avoidance of doubt, John Lennon and Twist and Shout is not a bad way to sound, is it? Let's then get into music. I mean, obviously, what you'd be sort of at the end of the 70s, but you are now going to be the second of my guests who has chosen the song by Mr. Springsteen, for which I'm very grateful. And I always point out to people that I didn't actually have a Springsteen choice in my music talks. But tell me about that, because I know you've said in your mails that it's your favourite song. So I'm always keen to hear people's stories and experiences around Bruce.
Yeah, well, I mean, really, I don't recall much of 70s music at the time. I think when you're quite a young kid, you hear music on the radio, you hear your parents playing stuff, but you don't really have any concept of whether it's new music or old music or what it might be. And because I'm the older of two siblings, I didn't have a thing that you often... I've heard you talk to guests about picking up music from your older brother.
Yeah, you were having to find the music as the eldest.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think my sister's ever forgiven me, but there we go. But now a lot of my very favourite music comes from the 70s, but obviously it's music I've kind of got into much later. So, you know, I love Queen, I love the Eagles, I love Jackson Brown. And so Bruce comes fairly into that category. I'm, as we've talked about before, a huge Springsteen fan. And the song I've chosen is very cliched, I suppose, if you want to look at it that way. But there's a reason why songs become famous and become iconic in terms of a particular artist in a particular era. And for me, that's very much the case. So, you know, when I came to the 70s, I didn't really have a shortlist. Much as I love so much 70s music, this is my favourite song that there is. And so it was a really quite a simple, certainly the simplest of all the choices I've made for the show.
Let's have a listen to it and then let's talk some more about it. To let it play until they, I want to know if love is wild, I want to know if love is real. So I was just thinking, if there's anyone listening who doesn't recognize what that was, you're listening to the wrong show. Springsteen's Born to Run. And yeah, when I was setting your playlist up yesterday, Ian, and I do like to test things out because things go wrong. And it's amazing. I mean, God knows how many hundreds, probably thousands of times I've heard that song. And I said the best, it still just leaps out and sounds magnificent.
Yeah, there's no question about it. I mean, for me, it's kind of that the song is what I would call almost the essence of rock and roll. I think it's got within it most of the things that I love about music, that I love about rock music especially.
Oh, go on. That's interesting.
Well, I think, in terms of the music, I feel it's such a driving and such a great rollicking song. It moves along at a pace. It's got great playing on it. And, I mean, you've got a fantastic sax solo in the middle of it by Clarence Clemons as well, obviously. Lyrically, I think it's great as well. I think it has something of a very optimistic feel to it because it's about being young. It's about getting out, and someone from a small town, that's something that definitely hit home with me when I first got into the song. But it's got a bit of naivety, a bit of romance. So I just think it's got a little bit of everything within there. And that's why I think it's stood the test of time with me, because no matter what stage of my life I've been at, it's always had something there that speaks to me.
Yeah, and that's a great summary. And I think the only thing in my mind, the only word you missed out there, is that it also has just enough pretentiousness in there. Let's face it, Hemi-powered drones is actually probably one of the worst lyrics anyone's ever written. But it works. It somehow works. And I don't think it's because I've listened to it 1,000 times. And I feel the same as you. You know, I can remember the first time in the 90s when Bruce came out and played Born to Run acoustic. And actually he talked about that then, about, you know, this has been, it's I think it was before, yeah, must have been before Land Home Dreams, but it was the theme of this song's been a good companion to me and I hope to you. And hearing that acoustic, you know, it absolutely worked. And, you know, similarly, I think it worked in the Broadway show. And I love it when he talks about, you know, when he gets asked the question, don't you get bored playing Born to Run? And it's like, no. And his great word of, you know, it's always in a live concert. It's summational. It pulls together everything that's gone on that evening, I think. And one of my favorite things at a Springsteen gig is actually, and I do this every time, I've probably done it for the last 20 shows, is when he starts to play Born to Run, is actually stop watching him and the band and just watch the audience. Because I think, and it doesn't just happen in shows, but it is just, I think, joyous to sit and or to stand and watch and see how people are reacting to it. So, yeah, great, great song. And have you ever heard the Frankie Goes to Hollywood cover?
Well, actually, that was my first experience of a song.
Because I actually think it's a really good version.
That was my first discovery of the song. And I thought, this is a great song. And I looked on the, you know, the Frankie Goes to Hollywood album cover and by Springsteen. And I thought, well, you know, this is interesting, because to me at that time, you know, Springsteen was kind of born in the USA and all of that kind of thing was happening. So it was the first time I kind of really got to know the song. So, yeah, I agree totally. Other than the fact it obviously lacks a sax solo, so it loses a bit of momentum in the middle. But I think they make a pretty good job of it. I think it's quite a nice tribute-type cover version rather than a reinterpretation.
They did have Trevor Horn producing them, who's no mug. Well, needless to say, great start. You were never going to go wrong with that one. Having pleased me immensely by choosing Bruce in the 70s, you've then gone and pleased my wife immensely by choosing probably her favourite band from the 80s.
Okay. Well.
So talk us through the 80s and talk us through your choice.
Well, I mean, the 80s is essentially my childhood. You know, it goes from when I was 7, 8 years old to when I was 17, 18. So you cover a lot of ground in there. So it's really when a lot of my musical tastes are taking shape. The first kind of music I really got into was rock. And that was because a friend of mine had an older brother, in fact, two older brothers who were big rock fans. And so the first band I can remember really liking was Status Quo. But they'd be recording things for us like, you know, I was 9, 10 years old. I was listening to Iron Maiden, AC/DC, these kinds of things, which wasn't really very typical, I guess, of the age or the time we were living in. But the 80s was obviously you get the chart music, which you start taking an interest in as you come into secondary school age, into your early teens. And that meant that a lot of electronic music, which I loved and I still love a lot of it to this day. I particularly used to be really into the Pet Shop Boys in the mid-80s.
Yeah, I noticed.
I found the Pet Shop Boys share a lot with a lot of bands I like because I like lyrics. And Neil Tennant is a very smart guy.
Agreed.
And some of their lyrics were very clever and really quite a lot of interesting references in them. And I really enjoyed the Pet Shop Boys, certainly their first couple of albums before they went too much down the dance music route.
I like the clever sort of intellectual side of them. And then, of course, they did also cover a Springsteen song on the last album.
I didn't know that.
Ah, so they covered Last to Die off Magic.
Wow.
So one, go and listen to the album because the album's really good. But two, it's a really interesting version.
I can imagine. The Pet Shop Boys were the main sort of incarnation of my, what you'd call 80s music rather than music that was released in the 80s. That would be sort of the main sort of aspect of that came into my choices. And they came pretty close to getting my selection for this show, probably with the Rent would have been the song I'd have gone for.
And you were good enough, and I love it when people do this, to send through sort of your shortlist. So Romeo and Juliet, which I love that album and I love that song. Don't Change in Excess, Fast Car, Tracy Chapman, Rockville by REM. And just on REM, by the way, and I think people quite rightly, including me, get cynical about the remaster remix thing, but they've just released a complete remix of the Monster album, and it is so much better than the original. The one choice on there that was completely new to me was Woman Be My Country by Johnny Clegg and Sabuka.
Yeah, well, it's a song that was from the 80s, although really I kind of got into Johnny Clegg later in the early 90s. So a friend of mine when I started university was really quite a big fan of Johnny Clegg. His father had sort of passed it on to him from in the 70s when Johnny first started recording. And I would say that probably other than Springsteen, Johnny Clegg has been one of the main artists of my adult life.
Oh, wow, that's great.
You know, he's a South African artist. He combined Western music with Zulu kind of music. I guess people would be quite familiar with that from Graceland and those kinds of things. In the 80s, his music was quite electronic and quite of its time, but Woman Be My Country was, I loved the song, and yeah, has a great sax solo, which we're seeing a theme coming out here, I think, as well. And I think, again, his lyrics are really clever. He's an intelligent guy. I just sort of really, really love what he's done over the years. And so that was, yeah, that was definitely one that I wanted to have in there. I came sort of, again, I came quite close to picking Johnny Clegg, because I think you like to get an artist that's been so important to you into the mix somewhere. But yeah, I couldn't quite get him in anywhere.
Johnny Clegg is a name I recognize, but if you actually ask me what I've listened to, it's probably very little. So I will definitely, definitely go and investigate. So we should probably get to your actual choice then.
Yeah, we should. I've chosen one of the most famous rock songs of the 80s, and that's Living on a Prayer by Bon Jovi. Bon Jovi were a band that I really got into in 86 when the Slippery When Wet album was released, and they started having big hits in the UK. And they were one of the first bands I remember actually them having a hit and me going out and buying not only the album it was on, but then the back catalogue as well.
Right, okay, yeah.
And I guess in some ways they were a gateway drug for Springsteen, if we can call it that, because obviously he was a hero of theirs from the whole New Jersey thing. And their New Jersey album was almost, I would say, their version of Bruce-type songs. Yeah, they're also one of my wife's favourite bands, and that's one of the reasons I've chosen this song, really, because around the turn of the 80s and 90s, we would go to student night in a club on the outskirts of Nottingham called the Black Orchid. And student night would have a kind of a whole mixture of music, but they'd always have a section where there was rock music. And it would usually, this would be the song that they'd play. They'd play Living on a Prayer to get everybody on the dance floor for the rocky section. And we were there every Monday night at the student night as we were 17, 18 years old. What I discovered many years later was that the woman who's now my wife, she was studying at the university in Nottingham at the time, a couple of years older than me. She had also been there on all of those nights.
Oh, really?
So she had been in the same club, getting back on the dance floor to dance to this same song that she also loved. And it was, you know, another decade or so before we actually ever met.
Oh, that's fascinating. I love things like that. So serendipity was trying, but didn't quite succeed.
So, yeah, it's really why I've gone for this particular song, because Bon Jovi's a band that both of us love, and particularly the link with that song, and the fact that we were completely unaware, but both in the same club, listening to it many times on the same Monday evenings back then.
That's brilliant. Let's take a little listen to John Bon Jovi and the band and Living on a Prayer. Another of those songs that you never, never get tired of.
No, that's right.
And Anthemic was made for songs like that. So when did you go to university, Ian? Would you be 19? Was that late 89 or 90?
91.
So, I mean, just one other question then about the 80s and growing up. And obviously, I think it sounds like we had similar backgrounds. I mean, in terms of university, what was that? Was that typical in your family, or were you the first?
No, I was the first.
Yeah, I thought that, as I was. I mean, what was the driver for you? Where did you get the sort of support and inspiration?
The driver for me was probably listening to too much Bruce Springsteen and wanting to get out of the small town where I grew up.
That's a much better answer than mine.
Just seeing that there was kind of, I guess, a bigger world out there than just working in a factory, working down the coal mine, and just wanting to go and do something for myself, I think. Also, it was kind of, at first I didn't really want to, but then I was kind of seeing a lot of people from school who were talking about going to university, and I was thinking, well, hang on a minute, why the hell am I not going to go to university? And it came from that as well, sort of a very pragmatic thing of not being want to be playing catch up in the employment market behind people who were actually maybe not as capable as me in due course. So.
Yeah, it's interesting. My dad worked on the docks all his life, but mainly he actually won a scholarship to a very good school, our academy, and his dad was a miner, but they just couldn't afford to send him. So, you know, for us growing up, my dad was all about education, 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 and forced would be too strong a word. But, you know, at 16, if somebody had said, if my parents had said to me, leave school, I probably would have done. Thankfully, they didn't. They did the opposite. They encouraged me to stay on. And then I remember very early in the lower sixth, there was a sort of breakout session where we were all put into the hall and they started talking about university. And there was this one guy in my class, but he wasn't my favorite person, and I clearly wasn't his. I remember we got back to the sort of form room and he just looked and he said, I suppose you'll be going to university, will you not? And literally, I can remember, it was like this bolt of motivation came into me. And it was that thing of, what do you mean? Of course I can.
Yeah, I think I can understand that. Yeah, my mother was very encouraging as well. My mother was the one particularly in our family who were pushing for me and my sister to take the advantages of that were available to us, the options that my mum and dad's generation never really had. So
yeah. Let's move on to the 90s. And obviously, off to university in 91, I suspect another decade of change, but talk us through it, Ian.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'd say in terms of the music that I listen to now, that would be the most important decade because it's so many different things happening. I go from school to university to traveling around to coming into work to really being an adult. And so there's an awful lot of changes going through there. Personally, and in terms of the music I was getting into as well. So, yeah, it really has sort of quite a shaping decade in terms of the impact I suppose it's had on me over that time. You know, the music when I started, it was very much indie music and, you know, the whole Manchester scene was around there and that kind of thing. And actually, I've got a playlist that I listen to sometimes. It was a playlist I put together at the instigation of a therapist I was seeing a few years ago with the idea that if you're feeling down, you're struggling to choose something entertaining or interesting to do, make a playlist so that you can always put it on and only put on it songs that are going to make you feel good.
Oh, wow.
Don't put on it songs that are going to make you think. Don't put on it necessarily your favourite songs. Put on it songs that are going to make you feel good. And it's full of music from that era. Things like There She Goes by The Lars.
Oh, yeah.
Can You Dig It by The Mock Turtles. Things like this. Things by The Wonder Stuff, who I loved.
Yep.
And as I was studying in Birmingham, they were a local band. Whenever they played a Stuffy song at one of the student nights, you know, the place goes absolutely mental. And
again, you know, one of my wife's favourite bands.
I think on that playlist there are about 30 odd songs. You know, I kept it within reason, but they're songs from a whole variety of genres and just songs either that bring back a specific memory or just songs that make me feel good.
I think you've just found your format for your podcast, sir.
Yeah.
Well, look, I mean,
therapy playlist.
Absolutely. And I'm with you with, like, There She Goes. That's another of those songs. And I've talked about this before. You know, my 80s choice was Mary's Prayer by Danny Wilson.
Oh, another song I love, yeah.
And it is one of those, everything is wonderful, being here is heavenly. And if that comes on, I stop and I smile. There She Goes is another one of those. So yep. If you don't mind sharing it, I'd love to put that up on the show notes because, well, one, I'd love to hear it, frankly. And two, I'd love
that's
to
put fine.
The show notes.
Yeah, that's fine.
Oh, that'd be great. That'd be great. So in amongst all of that, what made you choose Cigarettes and Alcohol by Oasis?
I think by the time the mid-90s come along, Oasis are getting huge and you've got the whole Blur, Oasis, Britpop thing, which I never really understood the point of why do you have to choose one good band over another good band? You know, it was kind of, personally, I preferred Oasis, but that's just a, you know, personal opinion. I liked Blur as well. And the song Cigarettes and Alcohol, I think it's, in some ways, I guess it sums up that period in my life. I could say it's those two things played quite a large part in my 1990s.
Yeah, me and you both.
The cigarettes no longer, the alcohol still these days. But
well, with that as background, we should have a listen to Cigarettes and Alcohol. You know, I always think it's funny when, I mean, obviously the Beatles connection for Oasis is so significant. And yet I think that's Liam doing his best Johnny Rotten vocal.
Yeah. I think it really is that kind of sticking two fingers up with a cigarette between them the world is
the swagger is in much, that song, the swagger and attitude. And longer term, I think Blur were the much more significant band, but those first two albums will hold up against anything in first. Yeah. I just, you know, my issue is I don't think they then went anywhere.
No, and I'm glad that the only time I saw Oasis live was in that era.
So where did you see them? Because I never got to see them.
I saw them when they were touring on the back of their first album. They just start to get pretty big in the UK, but I was living in Germany at the time. So we saw them in a very small venue, probably 200, 300 maximum capacity.
Oh, brilliant.
The kind of venue where you go in the bar beforehand and they were sitting two tables away having a pint before the gig.
Oh, fantastic.
You know, it's at that stage of their career. So even though they only had the one album of material to perform, I'm really glad that I saw them in that kind of venue rather than somewhere like Nebworth.
I'm totally with you, and I'm now jealous because I think that must have been a great experience when, you know, seeing that so close up, and also at that stage when all of the other issues hadn't started to come in.
Yeah,
and it's funny you saying those sort of venues. I went to see a guy I love, Craig Finn, who still is lead singer of the whole study, but has his solo career. And I went to see him 6 weeks ago, but it was at King Tut's Wah Wah Hut in Glasgow, which, of course, one, everybody claims that's where Oasis were discovered. But, you know, it's one of those iconic venues that as you go up the stairs, they've got the list of all the people who've played there, and everybody has played there. And you walk in and there's a door, and to the left is the bar. And to the right is what I still think people in some places in Scotland are called the concert room, which I reckon if you get 200 people in there, that was maximum. And the sound was absolutely fantastic, and the ceiling was low, and it was just brilliant. You mentioned Germany there, Ian. So when were you living in Germany, and whereabouts?
I did one of the years of my my degree course over there.
Ah, okay.
So we were at a university in a town called Wuppertal, which is near Düsseldorf in the west of Germany. It was probably one of the best years of my life, I think. We didn't have to do very much in terms of study. We spent most of our time listening to music, playing football, and traveling around Germany.
Brilliant.
Doing various bits of sightseeing. So, yeah, it was absolutely fantastic. 94, 95, that was similar.
Fantastic. And you're speaking to someone who sadly has zero aptitude for languages. Was languages just something that always felt natural?
Yes, it just was what I took to at school. You know, there's no background with anybody in my family ever studying languages, or no foreign background within the family, as far as we know. It was just something I did seem to have an aptitude for. And I did both French and German at school, in both of them to A-level, in fact. And German was the one that I preferred. That was the one I took on more into to later study.
Brilliant. Well, it's had a pretty significant impact on your life as well, hasn't it?
Absolutely, yes.
So as you said in your mail, I think, three great choices, but big names, classic stuff. Let's move on to the next decade. And I'm delighted to say that, in fact, your last two choices are by artists I'd never heard of.
Oh, excellent.
Which I always enjoy. So talk us through the noughties and a gentleman called David Ford.
The noughties have been very much about, really about my business and my marriage in terms of my personal life. I was working for a global translation company at the end of the 90s. I worked in as a project manager, and then I was on the corporate team for a while as well. I came out of that world and realised I wasn't really cut out for the corporate world for various reasons. And so I decided to start up myself as a freelance translator. One of the other reasons being I was constantly had been signing off invoices for very poor quality translations that I could have done better myself. And those invoices were for higher values than my salary was. And I thought, hang on a minute, I'm in the wrong part of the business here.
That's fascinating. Well, good for you and well done. Even with that, maybe as a safety net and a forcing function, I still think, you know, going on your own is a brave, brave thing to do.
Yeah, I'm always glad that I did, but I do sort of, yeah, I'm very grateful that it worked out. To add the tour guide into it sort of a few years afterwards, kind of, that was my first love in terms of work. And so to be able to add that into the portfolio was really something important.
So how did that come about then?
I always loved it. I always loved doing guided tours when we went on holiday anywhere or to visit anywhere when I was a kid. And I always wanted to work in tourism. And I found a job for my first 2 years after graduation working as a tour guide, tour manager on coach tours around Europe for UK and American visitors. So I was working 6 months a year, 6 months summer season, back-to-back tours, living out of a suitcase, travelling around Europe.
Wow.
Yeah, I loved the job, but I didn't like the living 6 months out of a suitcase. And
no, that's tough. That's tough.
Drifting further away from friends and family all the time. I'd take a look at some of the colleagues who'd been doing it for 20 years and just think, I don't want to end up like those guys. So it was something I always had in the back of my mind when I was getting more settled and So the chance came up to do the Blue Badge, which is the tour guiding qualification in the UK. And I did the course for that part-time, did the exams and qualified with that. And so, again, because I was working freelance, I was able to take on the work and do as much of it as comes in. But then the rest of the time, I've got my other work to fall back on as well.
It's a great balance.
Yeah, it's great fun. I think there's something about, it's a little bit of that element of performance, of coming along and sharing stories with people but telling people about things that they're interested in. I think it's really good to get that. You know, I'm not talented as a musician or anything like that, but I guess it's something of the same buzz to get that kind of great feedback from a tour when you've shared the information with the people.
Yeah, and I think it's the same, you know, I think if you're going on the tour as a customer, I think when you get a really good tour guide who's enthusiastic and making that connection, for me, it's exactly the same as going and seeing live music. I'm a massive fan of performers who recognize that it's a performance and there's a responsibility to entertain the audience. Now, you can do that however you choose to, but I personally find, you know, artists who turn up and decide that they're not going to have any dialogue with the audience at all, that's not building a connection with me.
Yeah, I think a lot of the artists I like to go and see, they like to tell a few stories, even a couple of Shaggy Dog stories. I don't mind that.
Absolutely.
We saw a guy called Robin Hitchcock last week. I don't know if you're familiar with him at all. Saw him playing in a church, actually, a brilliant venue in Birmingham. And he had a lot of these really brilliant stories that he was telling. Some of them were quite bizarre and off the wall, but he really was. It added so much to the show that he'd not just have the music, he had these really strange stories as well.
I'm with you. I'm absolutely with you. So David Ford, tell me about
him. Yeah. David Ford, well, the reason I like him is for precisely the reasons we've just been talking about, actually. He really engages with his audience. The last show of his that I saw that was earlier this year was a very sort of small show, even by his standards, where he talked about the songs and the process of writing the songs and chattered. He had the stage done up like a living room. So all of the guitar songs, he was sitting in an armchair. And he had like a standard lamp and a little coffee table. And
oh, brilliant.
It was almost like he'd invited you round for an evening at his house and was telling you the stuff. But I first came across him. He was a guest on Simon Mayer's show when Simon was on Radio 5 in the afternoons on 5 Live.
Yep.
And he had David Ford on as a guest, and I'd never heard of him. And I just enjoyed the way he talked about music and this kind of thing. And he performed a couple of songs from his first album at the time. And I thought, wow, this is a guy I'm going to check out. And so, yeah, straight away I went and sort of had a look for this album, bought it, and I've just followed his career since then. I said earlier that I think Johnny Clegg was one of the second to Springsteen throughout my life, but certainly in the last 10, 15 years, David Ford has been right up there for me in terms of the music that I've most wanted to listen to.
Let's take a little listen to Song for the Road, David Ford.
Well, the day cuts down lengthy shadows on unfamiliar towns, and I drove 300 miles from the place I call home. And I tip my hat to the angel of the north. And the sun, it set fire to the heavens on the hills of Sheffield tonight. And I will sail over this countryside with new friends and old. And we are nowhere, but man, we're all right. So you can keep your belief in whatever, and I'll wear my cynicism like a tattoo. And while poets try to engineer definitions of love,
So I have to admit, I haven't listened to any of his other stuff, but I have listened to that song 6 or 7 times in the last couple of days. And I think you're clearly onto something. And I love the line. You probably heard me laughing. I'll wear my cynicism like a tattoo.
Yeah, I love that particular song for the lyrics. He always described it as a song without a chorus, which I guess it is. But I think particularly the early 2000s for me, I got married in 2005. So my relationship with my wife began 3 days into the new millennium.
Wow.
And so we can't quite say we've been together for more than a millennium, but we did meet before that, but we really...
Well, you'd been trying way back in your student days, clearly.
Well, yeah, that's right. It's a long story. And the early years of that, I would kind of go traveling around a lot. I did a big charity event with some friends of mine that involved traveling all around the UK in a minibus for a week. And then sort of later, because I work in a job that involves going away quite a lot. And so this song's all about traveling around the UK and thinking about someone back home. And, you know, there's a couple of great lines about tipping my hat to the angel of the north.
I noticed that one, yeah.
And whenever I'm sitting on a coach or in my car, if I ever pass the angel of the north, I have a metaphorical tip of my hat in honor of the song.
That's brilliant. And I love, your description of his stage show, because one of the reasons I like going and seeing so much live music is I think when you get those insights into songs, even if it's just quick comments, or we went to see Jessica Hoop. So she did an album with Sam Bean from Iron and Wine a couple of years ago. Turns out that she's married to Elbow's road manager. So he's actually been living in Manchester for the last 10 years. She's American. And if you get the new Elbow album, she appears on the first track. But, you know, she, half a dozen of the songs from an album that I'd already fallen in love with, she just gave a bit more context to what was going on in the song. And, you know, you get home and you listen to it again and it sounds complete, so much better. On that, did you get to see Western Stars?
Not yet, no.
Well, you are in for a treat. I was lucky enough to get along to the cinema. Two observations, really. One, and I was wearing my cynicism like a tattoo on, I thought releasing the film version of an album you only released 3 months ago feels like cashing in a bit. The reality is the film versions on a number of the songs, Stones is a classic, are so much better than the album versions. And then you just get this insight into what he was thinking, how he put the album together. So, yeah, it's gone from being an album where I thought this is different and I think it's really good to absolutely loving it. But that was all because of the film, I have to say. So I think it's out on DVD before Christmas.
Yeah.
Get it.
I will definitely do that. And I agree. I think it works with Springsteen. I think when Bruce did the Storytellers as well,
yes,
back in the day, that was fantastic just to get his thought processes a little bit. And I think that's the same with all artists. I think if you're someone who properly listens to songs and listens to the lyrics and really is interested in how the structure of the song is put together and why, I just don't think you can beat having the actual person who wrote and performs the song talking about it that way.
I agree. And finally on that, and I know we're going all over the place, I mentioned Elbow's new album, but I love Guy Garvey. I mean, you talked about Neil Tennant being a clever lyricist. I think Guy Garvey is at times just genius. And on the new album, there is a song about Grenfell. There's a verse where it's like he's addressing there's nothing worse than rich rock stars talking about this stuff sometimes. But he has the fantastic line of, who am I, a Blarney Mantovani? Isn't that priceless? So I guess I should push us on into the current decade.
Yeah, I find it hard to believe that this current decade is nearly at an end.
Oh, tell me about it.
You know, it just seems to have flown by. And normally they say time flies when you're having fun. But in terms of the decades of my life, this has been the one where possibly the least changes have happened. You know, I've been married for the whole time. My business hasn't changed. There have been various things that have come along. And certainly in terms of the music I've been listening to, the change has been minimal. I think the shortlist I sent you, I think some of the artists, there was a lot of overlap between the noughties and this decade. It could have just been other songs from those various artists that I actually picked. Yeah, I think David Ford, I could certainly have picked two or three of his songs for this decade. And, you know, some of the other guys I've been listening to a lot, like Ryan Adams and Jesse Malin and people like this over the both of those decades.
So I am off to see Jesse Malin actually again at King Tut's in March next year. But here's all the connections. So the last time we saw Jesse Malin, he was supporting the Whole Steady in Manchester, and we did get to meet him. And I did get to ask him about recording with Bruce.
Yes.
Tell me then about Anthony. Is it Anthony D'Amato?
Anthony D'Amato.
D'Amato.
Pronounces it. Yeah. Well, we were talking about going to see Jesse Malin, and I first saw Anthony supporting Jesse, 2012, I think. And we saw him in Nottingham, and I went with a good friend of mine, one of my main gig buddies, and my sister as well. It was the tour when Jesse was playing the whole Fine Art of Self-Destruction.
Oh, fantastic.
Each of the shows. But he had two supports, and Anthony D'Amato was the first support. And it was a Sunday night. He's the second support. And, you know, that's a tough gig. And he walks out with an acoustic guitar and a harmonica. And he said, "Hi, my name's Anthony D'Amato. I'm from New York City." And he plays this amazing music, and you know, was blown away. Yes, the Jesse Malin gig was great. The main support band I wasn't particularly impressed with, but you know, I went straight to the merch stand. I bought Anthony's album and had a little chat to him, and I've just followed him ever since. And I think he's released maybe four or five albums now and a couple of EPs. He's just got a new EP out around that at the moment, but started releasing a couple of songs, and he is another great songwriter and performer. Americana, he's visited all different kinds of Americana. The song of his I've actually chosen is very much on the countryside. I've seen him playing with supporting country artists. And last year he played his first, it's called a headline tour in the UK, but it was very, very small venues. I mean, the venue we saw him in Liverpool, I think there were about 50 people there.
Wow.
There was a little cafe, and we chatted to him afterwards, and we were having a laugh with him because there was one of the songs that he performed that night, a song called On the Banks of the River Where I Died, which the first time I saw him with Jesse Malin, he said, "Yeah, this is a new song I wrote just last week while we were on tour." And then last year when we saw him in Liverpool at this little cafe, he said, "Oh, here's one of my older songs." And it's the same song, you know. So,
oh, that's brilliant. Yeah, I've been following you quite a while, my friend.
Yes. So, and I think he's another one who really puts a lot of thought into his lyrics. And the song I've chosen is something that had a real impact on me because for various reasons, health reasons and financial reasons and things, I had a bit of a reassessment of what was important to me a number of years ago. And this song was a song that I was listening to a lot at that time. And the fact that it's about not being so materialistic and focusing on what's really important in life, that really was something that had a big impact on me at that time. And so that's why it's this particular song that I've actually chosen.
That's a great introduction, Ian. Let's take a listen to a bit of Silver and Gold.
It's so cold outside. I've been shivering out. So I'll sing you a song of how it all went wrong. So you took my hand, said understand that long after we're gone, fortunes fade but love it lingers on. There's no diamonds on your face. feel like the richest man I know.
I can hear your love of lyrics, and I think we're on similar pages when it comes to that. So again, I look forward to exploring a bit of Anthony's music. It's also to you saying about support acts, because I always try and get to the support act, but the reality is that more often than not, it's disappointing. But I remember in Seattle, we had the Neptune Theatre literally 800 yards from the house, a lovely old 30s cinema that had been converted into a concert venue. And it was also, it was actually like, we've had the story I'm going to tell is about Paul Weller, but a lot of the Brit bands would turn up there. And it was, of course, fantastic. You'd see them in this relatively small venue and they'd be selling out over here. But we went to a gig and the name of the band we went to see has gone out of my head. I've got Friendly Fires, but it was somebody else. But the support band were undoubtedly the worst thing I've ever heard in 40 years of listening to music. And I actually think what the headliners were doing was, we'll get a local band.
Yeah.
And whoever was involved had obviously slipped in these kids who literally just couldn't play. I mean, it wasn't avant-garde and different. They were just awful. And 3 nights later, we're going to see Paul Weller. And my wife said, are we really going to do the support act thing again? And I went, come on. And we turned up, and it was a lady called Lucy Rose, who was absolutely fantastic. And it was just one of those moments. I was, you know, you're just getting to the point that goes, oh, no, I'm just going to start turning up for the headliners. And then you have an experience like you had with Anthony or we had with Lucy. And there is that thing, I think, that you feel like you've discovered them. And I think that excitement of, you know, you haven't got it off Spotify, or it's not a friend, or it's not a review you've read. You've just gone to a show. You've never heard any of the music. And 30 minutes later, you sat there saying, I want to listen to some more. So that's a good thing. So you referenced there, Ian, about, you know, doing a reappraisal of your life. And if I take you back to the start, we talked about the work you were doing this morning and also your autism diagnosis. So were those things connected?
Absolutely. The talks about autism that I've been doing are since my diagnosis. It was something that I wanted to get into for two main reasons. One is to work on improving awareness and understanding, because I think that's something that benefits everybody. But also in terms of using my capabilities in terms of going and talking to groups of people and communicating with them in that way, and coming from a point where I've been involved in business and that kind of thing, to go and speak to people as almost a kind of go between the two worlds, as to go in and talk about those kinds of issues. So that's where it's come from, really. It's something that I've just really started to do in the last 12 to 15 months. Something I'm probably looking to do more in the future, as more people sort of find out about it and want to take it up. So it's just kind of a way of me putting a little bit back into for support that I've received since my diagnosis, and trying to help other people to have a better time of it, because I found a business and corporate working environment very challenging for reasons that I didn't discover until a whole load of years afterwards. And if that journey can be made easier for other people, then so much the better.
Well, seriously, let me put you, the guy at Microsoft is a guy called Michael Vermeesch. Michael, he was one of our very best strategy consultants, stunningly bright guy. But he now works, his full-time role is basically both within Microsoft and external, but trying to do what you're talking about of raising awareness and what do companies need to do, and how do you tap into this as a talent base and all of that. And he's a remarkable guy. So I would be delighted to connect the two of you. Fascinating conversation, sir. I knew it would be. It's been a delight for me. You know, my standard last question, any last thoughts from you?
No, only to say that it's been an absolute pleasure. I've thoroughly enjoyed the conversation today, but also I thoroughly enjoyed the difficult job of coming up with my selections. and you know, it's kind of made me go back through a few kinds of things that I haven't heard for a long time, but that did mean a lot to me at various points in my life. And so that's been a really positive thing from it as well. It's really you know, reopened up a few avenues in my music collection that I'd kind of forgotten about.
Well, that's good to hear, and I'm glad that's happening to you. It's definitely happening to me. I mean, I had a very specific one this week that in the last episode, I was pretty disparaging about Duffy's Rock Ferry and the basis that she got the Brit Award and Adele didn't. And actually, a couple of people pinged me and went, I think you should go back and listen to it again, which I did. I posted on Facebook on this last night, and it is actually a really good album. But I'm getting that happening quite a lot. And then, you know, your episode today is great of just being introduced to new music. And then some of the other stuff in your list as well was, yeah, I haven't listened to that for a while. So I will go and do that. And if people want to get in touch with you, Ian?
It's Ian Braisby on Twitter is the easiest way. If they can put up with my rantings on various issues. I'm sure there is some good stuff on music and various other things on there as well.
That's great. And if people want to get in touch with me, then Twitter is at musictalkspod. If you want to use good old email, it's musictalkspod@outlook.com. And I mentioned the Facebook page. I do post, it's not every day. I've decided that was just becoming, this has got to be fun for me. And it was just becoming an imposition of, oh, I've got to do my daily post. But I post most days, and it's normally stuff to do with the previous episode. And one of the things I would love to get up there is that playlist you talked about, Ian. But if you like what you hear, please do go onto the Facebook page. And that also is at Music Talks Pod. So thanks again, Ian, for a fascinating conversation. We're all over the place, but in a good way.
We really have.
And I've thoroughly enjoyed it. And I will be back in 2 weeks' time with the next episode of Music Talks Pod.
Thank you.